Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 26, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. And we're also happy to be joined, as always, by our good friend Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, 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 good. I'm glad to see you guys are well. There's good things and bad things happening in the world. Sometimes the bad things seem like they take precedence, and we have to come to terms with them. And it is a unfortunate reality that there are things that we need to fight and we need to be aware of, right? I mean, just the current administration continues to do things that are unhappy-making, and we have to look reality in the eye. I think this past week there was another example of the kind of anti-science attitude that has taken root at the EPA when there was a conference in Rhode Island, the state of Rhode Island, little tiny state of Rhode Island. So if you're not from Massachusetts and you're listening to this podcast, get out your global map and zoom in, and you will see that Rhode Island is tucked into the lower left-hand corner of Massachusetts, and you could probably walk across Rhode Island in a day. Mariah, you could probably run across Rhode Island in a day if you wanted to, right? Anyway, there was a conference there. Narragansett Bay is actually the big body of water that pushes up into Rhode Island. It's where the U.S. Navy was formed, allegedly, et cetera, et cetera. But tell me, DR, can you give me the story about what happened at the conference on the fate of Narragansett Bay that happened earlier this week?
Yes, there was, as you noted, scheduled to be a conference on climate change in Narragansett Bay, and two EPA scientists and one EPA contractor were scheduled to talk about the risks that climate change posed to Rhode Island. But all of a sudden, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt pulled the old Gwen Stefani and said, "Don't speak," and told them to basically to stand down, and essentially saying that they could attend, but they could not weigh in, which is what has long been predicted, that the EPA under Pruitt censoring science and basically telling scientists to shut up, very similar to some of the goings on during the George W. Bush administration, where scientists such as James Hansen were told to shut up rather than speak truth.
Right. I think there were protests outside of the conference. I saw pictures of people with duct tape over their mouth and stuff like that. But it is. It's one of these things that you should know about, and that we should be taking into account as we prepare to vote in future elections, right? I think that that's just one more thing that's out there. I guess there was also, I don't know, Mariah, if you heard about this other story, but there was a report in The Guardian that said something like 76% of the flying insect species on the planet have already disappeared, and that it's just progressing along. There was and basically it was a 20-year study where these guys, I guess they would go out in the evening or in the day and put up big nets and capture a bunch of flying insects and weigh them. Right. And so over the course of 20 years, the poundage kept going down, and they've I don't know. Did either of you guys see any of those reports?
I mean,
or just me?
I know that we are. I think what are they saying, that we're just in the beginning of the sixth great extinction, right? The extinction event. Right. There's been five that we have documented over all time. And here we are in what they say is the sixth. Six Extinction. Elizabeth Colbert is an author who wrote a whole book about it, which is a very interesting book. I recommend it. And I think I guess we've lost like 20,000 species. I don't know the exact duration of that, but we've lost like 20,000 species, and we're losing them at much, much faster rates than we ever have before.
Well, I mean, it's so there was that kind of report that, and of course the insects, most people think that insects are disgusting and to be crushed at the earliest opportunity, right? I mean, you know, people don't like insects generally speaking, but they do serve useful purposes of eating other worse insects and pollinating our food. So collapse of the insect populations has a significant impact on human health. I mean, it's not just that the mosquitoes are gone, right? I mean, I think in tandem with that, there was a different report that talked about increasing acidification of the ocean. And this is, it's many people may not get it, but if you have carbonated water, Mariah, make sure I'm honest on this, right? If you have carbonated water, what they do is they take water and they drive carbon dioxide gas into it, right? And that's the bubbles, that's the fizzy. But that carbonated water also becomes a little bit more acidic. It's carbonic acid, I think, is what's in the water. And right. that's because the CO2 goes into the water and makes a little bit of this kind of acid. And that's why the sparkly water gives you such a kick when you drink it, right? It's got a little bit of a cleaning to your palate. Well, as we put more and more CO2 into the air, that CO2 gets mixed into the ocean water. The ocean water becomes slightly more acidic. And, of course, what that does is impede the shell formation of tiny little things like the plankton, which are, of course, the base of the ocean food chain. So, I mean, the ocean acidification, something I heard it was called the evil twin of climate change, right? This is the other side of this terrible thing that's developing. And so I say these two things because for the following reason. I put up, I listened to a podcast this past week from a couple of guys over in England, and the name of the podcast is Sustainababble. And their mandate, the mandate they've taken on, is to discuss climate change issues in a lighthearted way, somewhat funny way. And they succeed. It's funny. But they got themselves talking about the collapse of the insects and the ocean acidification, basically scaring each other's pants off, right? And, I mean, these are seriously impactful consequences. And I guess the question comes, how, as a climate hawk, should you take care of yourself? How do you maintain the emotional commitment? At what point do you roll up in a ball and say, forget it, I'm not gonna, you know, I can't handle it anymore? I mean, I'll put that as an open question. How do we, and by implication, what advice do we have for people to, in the face of this ongoing craziness, I mean, what are we supposed to do?
You know, I don't know if either of you have seen Josh Fox's, I think it's like How to Love All the Things That Climate Cannot Change or something like that. And, you know, that, I mean, that it occurs to me that one thing to do is to, you know, embrace and enjoy those things in life. But that's a very small salve to the problem. I mean, as you say, you know, ocean acidification is definitely a big deal. The oceans are absorbing the carbon dioxide, right, which is keeping it out of the atmosphere, but when it goes into the ocean, it's really, I mean, the Great Barrier Reef has declined by 42% since 1990. That's a lot of the Great Barrier Reef. And that's, I think, a conservative estimate. There's some research that said that there's only 20 to 30% of coral cover left across. Because as the ocean acidifies, it also causes the corals to bleach, which is their first. That means the organisms, the photosynthetic organisms, hop out of them, and that's the first step toward them dying. So, you know, it's hard to remain optimistic.
I mean, I have thought a little bit about this. Let me, rather than put you guys on the spot, let me just put this out there. I read an article on Facebook, the purveyor of all knowledge nowadays, but it was mostly about the little article was mostly about white privilege, right, in the face of the kind of racist systematic racism we see out in the world, is that white people get to kind of step back and say, I'm just going to live my life for a little bit and not be involved, right? I'm just going to take care of myself. And that's because you have the privilege of doing that. And I think as climate hawks, we have the kind of the privilege to sort of step back or imagine you have the privilege to step back and say, look, I just have to lead my life. I can't be on the front line all the time. But that is not a privilege that is extended, say, to the people in Puerto Rico, right? That power is out 24 hours a day, all the time. And so at one level, there's a moral imperative. And I think it's coupled with the idea that it's an arrogant to despair because we don't know the game is up, right? You can be tired and exhausted and depressed by the news, but you don't know the long-term good consequences of what you're doing. And so to say that I know in advance, I have, godlike knowledge that we don't, we have to give up. You just don't, right? And so you can't give up. You have a moral responsibility to keep up. And I think that activism is also gives you some sense of positive outlook. So, DR, let me put you on the spot. What is it? What keeps you coming back and looking at this sort of horrific news with this Twitter in chief and Pruitt and ocean acidification and stuff like that?
Well, I may botch the quote, and I may botch the author of the quote, but isn't the line attributed to Thomas Jefferson that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance? As they say, the other other line about activism is sort of the rent that you pay for being a citizen, essentially, that you have to stay aware, and you have to that may be a Maya Angelou quote. I may have that misattributed as well. But again, if you to be a human being is to. Or to be a conscious human being is to be engaged and to not simply let injustices or wrongs in society that can be righted slide by. So you don't have the luxury of saying, I'll go turn to HGTV or whatever. You got to sort of stay involved.
I think each of us are sort of pointing at a moral imperative, right? That you don't really have. I mean, every generation in time gets a task, right? I mean, it's the famous quote of Gandalf, right? Now I can't quote it, but basically he tells Frodo, you don't get to choose, right? All you have is the time you're given, and you can't walk away from it. I mean, we've got many important times in American history. I mean, World War II. I mean, it's all kinds of times where people really faced terrible circumstances. And they, you can't walk. I mean, it's un-American to walk away, I guess. I mean, go ahead, Mariah.
Well, I absolutely agree. And I think you're right. We can't, we have to stand up. We have to do everything within our power. We can't become disheartened. But it is hard. There was just this Think Progress article about Jeff Sessions. There's congressmen pushing Jeff Sessions to call environmentalist terrorists, to prosecute them as if they were terrorists. And directly they're saying to seek dramatically harsher criminal treatment of environmental activists. That's a big fight to fight when you're going up against the government that wants to punish you as a terrorist of the country,
I mean, but the question is, when that push goes one way, I mean, there's no draft, right? There's no one going to come force you at gunpoint to enter the army, right? For better or worse, we don't do that anymore. There's no one drafting us to fight the climate fight. But as it gets uglier and uglier, I don't know. You mean it basically strips away the complacency and this idea that, oh yeah, America is a great place and we're all fine, everything's good, we don't really have to sacrifice for it. I mean, it's horrifying, but man.
I mean, I forget the name of the guy, we talked about it. It's Ted Stinnett of the Environmental Voter Project. I go back to him where he's trying to get super voters. He's trying to put together, to get environmentalists to come together in a way that makes us as powerful as like NRA voters, right? And that does give me hope, right? If we can get people to come together, get them to vote, get them to have the kind of lobbying and political pressure that, say, the NRA does to shape policy, can that change things?
I mean, I think yes. And the question is, do you get that kind of, you build that sort of coalition based on what? Is the NRA built that on principles? They've certainly claimed to be patriotic, right? And they go on and on about Second Amendment rights with some sort of, I'm not sure what the underlying appeal is. I'm afraid it's a dark and unhappy thing. But what virtue, what noble thing should climate hawks be making? And I guess this is the question, what's the organizing principle? I mean, what's the fundamental thing that you keep coming back to? At least for me, it's like, I mean, you have to build a world that comprehends the future, right? That is not just in the now, right? Maximizing profit in the now. I mean, that's in that. What is that responsibility? Is that the simple virtue that you build the NRA, you know, the equivalent of an NRA around? I don't know.
It's a fascinating question. As we're discussing this, I go back to a controversy from years ago, which if you think about it, does have something of a climate hook. It is. Do you remember the John Mayer song "Waiting on the World to Change," the anti-Iraq war song from a few years ago? It was a bit of a controversial song because there was one critic who said, "Wait a minute, the message of the song was that younger people should simply wait until they get older, and then when they're older, they will have the political power needed to make more of a just world. Why don't people of Mayer's generation use the power that they have, use their activism now to make sure that a better world is possible?" And if you think about that, you know, it is something that you know, whether your issue is climate hawks or Black Lives Matter or whatever, you have to move now. You can't just simply wait for things to happen. You have to make things happen. And that's what keeps you motivated.
Right. Just to that point, I mean, many people are heard somewhere. People hope for a better future. Well, hoping for a better future doesn't get you anywhere. What you do is you build a better future, right? You make happen what your vision is. And I think that's a motivating force for me, is that no matter what, you can always... You're always working to build something, because someday Donald Trump, right, is going to be right up there with Mussolini as on the dustbin of history. And
exactly. Remember the line that Deval Patrick had when he ran for governor of Massachusetts? His line was, "Hope for the best, then work for it."
Right.
That's essentially what you have to do.
Well, there's the quote, the moral arc of arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. I think I'm botching that, by Martin Luther King. But a lot of, I've heard said that while that might be true, it happens because people work toward it. It takes, you know, Martin Luther King did not just sort of sit and let it start bending toward justice. Right. And, you know, I think that.
And he's a guy who faced some pretty dark times, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And he didn't walk away. I mean, look at Nelson Mandela. He didn't walk away, right? And so, I don't know. I mean, it's, we should return to this, because I think that, you know, maybe in some future show, maybe we get someone to because I think not only, I mean, I'm sure that many people who are concerned about climate hawks experience a sense of fatigue almost. But how do we support each other, you know, embrace reality and still have the moral vibrancy to want to come back and keep pushing stuff? And I think that I mean, I was listening to something on Krista Phillips, right? Immediate. There was some on. So she's on NPR. I forget. But, I mean, you know,
Krista Tippett.
Yeah. Whatever show she runs. About you know, meditation and sort of this Zen approach to the, you know, issues in your life that allows you to maintain your contact with humanity without becoming overwhelmed. I don't know. I mean, those are pretty heavy-duty topics, but...
Yeah, you know, I think one of the big challenges, too, with climate change is a lot of people say it's similar to retirement, right? you know, people have a hard time planning for retirement because it's so saving for retirement rather because it's so far away. And that's how climate change feels. And I will say that I think it's feeling less far away when you see the fires and the hurricanes hitting, and people are now starting to talk about climate change. And I do think there's a shift in the vocabulary and the awareness around it because we're seeing the effects. And while it's not great to be seeing these effects, this also may be the imperative to get people to start moving in directions that we need people to move.
All right, well, look, so dear listener, please smile. Look right now, take a deep breath. The three of us, we should take a deep breath, hold it for 3 seconds, and then let it out. Because, this is a stressful time. Listen, if anyone out there has a suggestion about how to deal with the trauma that we're in, and we will try and find some way to come back to this, but I guess the first thing is to recognize it, accept that this is something to think about, and that you shouldn't feel alone, isolated, or burned out if you look around and say that the news seems bad all the time, all right? So we love you out there in podcast land. Please. okay, let me see. We will try and put up links to some of the stuff we talked about. I'm not sure. We spent a lot of time just voicing opinions tonight. But the blog will be up at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find the show on Facebook at /massclimateaction. And, of course, you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, etc., etc. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we'll close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon, and that all climate hawks find a way to hang in there to a successful future. Anyway, thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Mariah, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Everybody, keep smiling out there. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.